Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We get out of the studio and onto the road to find the kind of radio you don't hear so much anymore. Stories off the beaten path and usually away from the top headlines. We'd love to hear your thoughts about the show. Our email address, indianaweekend@gmail.com. I'm John Strauss. Thanks for tuning in today. Sunshine Week begins Sunday, part of a nationwide discussion about the importance of access to public information and what it means to you. In Indiana, public access rights are monitored by the Indiana Coalition for Open Government. Professor Jerry Lanoska of Indiana University, formerly of Ball State, is president of that group, a broad-based coalition of journalism organizations, lawyers, and citizens groups that exists to inform, educate, and advocate for public access to government meetings and documents. He points out, as with so many things, there are no guarantees that the rights we have to open government will stay that way.
One issue that's interesting to me as someone who's tracked the access law, the development and execution of the access law over the years, is that the exceptions to the access law always seem to increase over time. They never seem to really decrease. So what the access law allows citizens to do in Indiana is to inspect and copy public documents. You can walk into a government agency during business hours. You can ask for documents. You can look at them. You can make copies either on the agency's equipment or your own equipment. If you use your own equipment, you can do it for free. If you use the agency's equipment, they're allowed to charge you the cost of making a copy. That's the basic gist of the access law. There are now, I believe, 13 exemptions to access. So in other words, there are 13 categories of records that are accepted from disclosure under the access law. Government officials cannot by law give you documents or pieces of documents containing information in those 13 exemptions. And they include things like social security numbers and trade secrets and so forth, things that most of us would agree probably should not be disclosed to the public as a matter of course. But then there's this whole other category, and I think we're up to 24 exceptions listed under this section of the statute that is discretionary. In other words, that means that officials have discretion to either release or not release the documents. And the only thing they have to do with regard to those documents is be consistent. So if they decide they're going to release them, they have to release them to everybody without discriminating one party to another. And if they decide to withhold them, they have to withhold them from everybody. I think it's ridiculous to have that many discretionary exceptions. We shouldn't allow government officials to, by their own discretion, decide to withhold documents. There should be a statutory reason why documents should be either released or not released. But the interesting trend over time is that those discretionary exemptions keep increasing. There was a time when there were, I think, 15 or 16 of them, and over the past 10 years or so, we've gotten to the point where now we have 24. And we have the legislature in session right now, and they're looking to add more.
In what ways is this law being looked at now for possible changes?
Well, I don't think there's a wholesale effort to look at amending or revising the access law, which is good, probably. You have to be careful what you ask for. Activists like myself think that it might be a good thing to take a wholesale look at the access law and improve it. But when you open the door, it might actually end up not improving it. It might make it worse. So I'm a little on the fence about whether that should happen. So I don't think that's going on right now. I think what's happening in the legislature is that there are some targeted efforts to make certain things public and certain things private. You know, I'm speaking with my Coalition for Open Government hat on right now. Steve Key from the Hoosier State Press Association lobbies on behalf of newspapers for access issues, and he also serves on the ICOG board. And he has given us a report of all the bills that are in the session right now that would affect access issues. For instance, there's a big effort to make it criminal to photograph agriculture operations without the owner's permission. That doesn't really affect public records per se, but it certainly affects public access and freedom to gather information.
I guess the argument for that change would be the people who think that their privacy is being violated because their agricultural operations are being photographed. On the other hand, people note that this kind of work in the past has yielded abuses of animals and conduct that needed to be brought to light.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we're talking about a situation where there are there's a private farm operation that has employees coming into work who may decide to take some undercover video, for instance. That's an example of what would be criminalized under these bills. And yes, that conduct, that sort of whistleblowing conduct in the past has revealed, has exposed abuses that are important for the public to know about with regard to treatment of farm animals, food safety issues, and so forth. So there are serious public safety concerns, I think, that would suggest that maybe this is not a good idea. But that's an example of the sort of thing that happens in the legislature. Every year there's an effort to, or numerous efforts to, shut down access to one area or another of either public records or public ability to gather information about our institutions. And that's ultimately what this is all about. The Act protects our ability to keep an eye on the institutions that have an impact in our lives.
Just the news media?
No, this is written for citizens. In fact, journalists don't have any special protection under this law, either the Federal Freedom of Information Law or the State Access Law. And that's a really important aspect to that. I love a quote from, there's an old German philosopher who said, "The job of a citizen is to keep his mouth open." I just love that quote because it fully expresses what a citizen's job is in a democracy that consists of informed consent. We're supposed to be informed about our government, and we're supposed to have something to say about our government. You can't really have something to say if you don't have the information. And so, you know, I think for journalists, it's important because we tend to be proxies between citizens and public officials and provide citizens with something to say. But that doesn't mean that journalists are the only ones who should be out there advocating for access rights or looking at public records. The access law specifically is written for any person, citizen or non, journalist or non, to go in and look at the affairs of government.
And the spirit of the law is mentioned even in its introduction, that government officials are to be the servants of their people, of the people, and not their masters.
That's right. The preamble to the access law is a wonderful piece of writing that actually borrows from phrases that come out of Enlightenment philosophy about the role of government, that government exists to serve the people, not the other way around. And there is further language in there that talks about how the law is to be construed broadly. And I think that's really important. So in keeping with the spirit of the law, then, public officials ought to do everything they can to release records when asked, as opposed to trying to find ways to not release them. And in practice, I'm not sure that always happens.
Professor Jerry Lanoska, president of the Indiana Coalition for Open Government. Their website is indianacog.org. There are all kinds of resources there, as well as at the site of the Indiana Public Access Counselor, in.gov/PAC. The Coalition for Open Government has an event coming up on March 16th, which is Freedom of Information Day, and is held during Sunshine Week each year.
Indiana Weekend, real radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line to let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Now here's John Strauss.
There was quite a remarkable story in the Indianapolis Star recently. Reporters Tim Evans and Ryan Sabalow found out that state officials paid the family of a powerful Indiana Department of Transportation executive more than $1.8 million for land on the Southern Indiana I-69 project. That's remarkable in itself, but there is more. Because of state law, it's a secret why that money was paid. Here's how the Star put it. Unlike some other states, Indiana permanently prohibits the disclosure of the appraisal, offer, and settlement documents used in land purchases for highways, so it's nearly impossible to tell whether corruption, favoritism, or overspending occurred, as the state paid $162 million to buy right-of-way for the I-69 extension across southern Indiana. Jerry Lanoska is a former reporter who went on to become a professor of journalism at Ball State and at Indiana University. He is president of the Indiana Coalition for Open Government.
When the state builds a highway, it can compel the purchase of property, compel owners along a highway route to sell property to the state for use for the highway route. And that's what happened with I-69, and it will continue to happen as that project moves forward. Under state law, and I don't think this is part of the access law, incidentally, which is an interesting part of this, there are many provisions of Indiana law that are not in the access law that can affect whether records are accessible or not to the public. So there's one of the exceptions to the access law, in fact, is a big, broad catch-all that says anything that's protected by statute, that is made confidential by statute, cannot be released. That is a huge, huge loophole. I guess it's not really a loophole. It's really a huge catch-all to allow the legislature to enact provisions throughout the rest of the Indiana Code to make records confidential. And this is one of those cases where, specifically on these highway cases, where appraisal information, the initial offer, and the sale price. So if the state buys a piece of property from a landowner, the government does not have to release the appraisal, the offer, or the final sale price. That's taxpayer money that does not have to be disclosed. So that's an example where the access law doesn't really give us adequate access to know whether the government is paying a fair price, whether it's treating landowners equally, for instance. Those are the kinds of issues that we might be interested in knowing about, but we can't under current law.
It's probably worth saying that these laws, like you said, aren't just for the news media. They're for everyday folks who may have questions about zoning procedures or lots of things about how their government operates. There's an office of the Public Access Counselor.
That's right. Citizens can go to www.in.gov/PAC. PAC stands for Public Access Counselor. And the Public Access Counselor does not have enforcement authority, but is a good resource for both citizens and agency officials to use to mediate, in a way, disagreements or questions about public access issues. So if a citizen goes into an agency, for instance, and asks for a record and is denied and believes that that denial is incorrect, he or she can go to the Public Access Counselor and ask for an informal or formal opinion about whether the record should be released. And so that is the job. The Public Access Counselor is appointed by the governor. It's a statutory position that exists to make rulings about whether records or meetings should be open or not. Now, once the Access Counselor makes a ruling or issues an opinion, the agency doesn't have the legal obligation to abide by it if it chooses. So ultimately, the enforcement of this ends up being on the citizen's shoulders to go file a lawsuit if he or she thinks that the agency has broken the law. But it has proven to be a helpful process, and the Public Access Counselor has proven to be a helpful official in that capacity.
And I think the law allows a citizen who's suing to get records open to recover their legal costs, right, if they have a formal opinion from the Access Counselor.
If you go to the Public Access Counselor, get a favorable opinion that says a record should be released, for instance, and the agency still refuses to release the record, and you end up suing and prevailing in your lawsuit, then you can, under the statute, as long as you've gone to the Public Access Counselor, you can get your attorney fees paid. It comes at the very end of the process, so there are many of us who would argue that it would be better to have some enforcement authority mechanism in the law to force agencies to comply on the front end rather than forcing citizens to sue to get compliance. But that is the laws that exist today. And we do have an event coming up. We're still working on the final details, but on March 16th, it's National Freedom of Information Day. We will be having a panel discussion in Indianapolis at the Nora Branch Library. That is a Saturday. It's at 1 p.m. There will be a couple of journalists from Indianapolis. We're going to have an attorney, and I will be talking about a recent audit of Indiana's public access statutes as well during that panel session. So citizens, it's open to the public. Anybody can attend, hear the discussion, and ask questions about this. So we'll be having more details about that. It's a program in partnership with Society of Professional Journalists. We'll be getting some announcements out soon.
A few years ago, there were a couple of tests done by a group of newspapers to test how well local officials at the county level were complying with public access laws.
Right. Indiana was the first state to do one of these exercises, which are called public access audits. And so a group of newspapers around the state had employees, interns, reporters go into public agencies, I think in all 92 counties, with the same goal at each agency to get certain records and to sort of gauge compliance. And I don't remember what the specific findings were other than that they weren't so great. Compliance was very spotty. There were challenges by agency officials to many of the people who went in and asked for records. There were vague vaguely intimidating responses from some of the officials involved, particularly at law enforcement offices around the state. So that access audit actually, I think, was one of the things that spurred the creation of the Public Access Counselor.
What's the argument that you would point out to people for support of these laws and the argument for making sure they're not watered down further?
Well, I think if you want to effect change in what government's doing, you need to fully know what they are doing. So it makes perfect sense to me that you would need to have full and complete access to as much of the information about government activities as you can. There are certain areas, obviously, that may need to be confidential. So national security information, for instance, if there is information that an agency has that, if released, could negatively affect national security, most people would agree that that should probably be kept confidential. But in practice, probably there's a lot of information that is lumped into that category that may or may not actually have any effect on national security. So those are exceptions to the law that tend to be overused, I think. And I would just say that I think it's important to err on the side of access so that we can have full information about the affairs of government and be able to make decisions that are fact-based on what we want government to do and what we want government to be. Only if we have full information about what is going on can we really, truly make an informed decision.
Professor Jerry Lanoska is president of the Indiana Coalition for Open Government. Their website is indianacog.org. Sunday begins Sunshine Week, and the Coalition has an event coming up on March 16th in Indianapolis to mark Freedom of Information Day.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
Sunshine Week begins Sunday, a chance to mark the importance of public access to government information. Indiana has the Access to Public Records Act and the Open Door Law, which help guarantee the public's right to know what's going on with your tax dollars. Open records laws aren't always popular. You might remember the case of the New York newspaper that published the addresses of gun permit holders. Journalism professor Jerry Lanoska, formerly of Ball State University and now at Indiana University, is president of the Indiana Coalition for Open Government. His group hasn't taken a position on the New York case, but Lanoska says he's given it some thought personally.
What happens with a gun permit, as with any other document that's created with government, is that if there's a government regulation that involves a private entity, whether it's an individual or an institution, you know, an organization, a business that has to file some paperwork with a government agency, a record is created. And that is the situation with gun permits. I don't know. I suppose there are people out there who don't think that government ought to be in the business of permitting or not permitting people to have guns. But the fact is that government does do that. It is a function that's routine probably in all 50 states, and there's a record created there. So the question is whether that should be public. I can understand the argument on the other side. I would say that I think there are good public policy reasons for having those records open to the public. And there are arguments on both sides, but certainly if you are a non-gun carrier and you have children in your house, you might want to know who in your neighborhood, which house in your neighborhood does have guns in the house. Those are issues that many parents would want to know. So I think there are arguments on both sides. It's definitely a controversial one where reasonable people could disagree. But in general, I would say ICOG's position would be, and my position would be, that the more access, the better. And when we choose for one reason or another to use a government agency or a government process to either deal with a problem or obtain some sort of privilege, a record gets created, and that is taxpayer money being expended on the record and on the effort to regulate. The idea that the public should be able to look at records that involve public spending, to me, that's a no-brainer.
One issue might be that people feel as if their privacy is under assault today, not so much from the government, I would think, but just in an online world that's increasingly connected, and increasingly people are feeling as if everything they do, every movement that they make is tracked. That really doesn't have so much to do with open records, but the conversation about open records is occurring at a time when people already feel that their privacy is being compromised all the time.
Yeah, that is certainly an issue. And there's so much information that is available online, and people have this sense of vulnerability to their information, whether it's from hackers or just from people doing a simple Google search. And all of that stuff gets rolled into one big ball of concern about privacy. I'm not sure what exactly to do about that. I think to some degree the toothpaste is out of the tube with regard to privacy, and we've chosen through technology and other means to live in an open society. I would urge people to try to compartmentalize their view of information and understand that what ICOG and other access advocates are interested in is purely and simply government information, the government which collects information about us and for us on our behalf and does so using the money that we pay into that government. That information collected on our behalf ought to be open, purely and simply.
In the I-69 case, were you saying that the means by which these transactions and these payments came to light?
Are you talking about the Star story?
Yeah,
the issue regarding the highway land transactions came to light as a result of some really fine investigative reporting by the Indianapolis Star that exposed this area of the law that allows for those records to be kept confidential. And so that's an example of an instance where reporters clearly play an important role here. Most people have regular jobs that don't involve constantly going to government agencies to ask what's going on. So the press has a very important role to play here as a proxy for citizens to know what's happening. And I think it's to the credit of the Star that that story ran and shed light on the fact that the government can keep these records confidential. And in that case, you can look at it and find a clear public policy reason why they shouldn't be confidential when we have a questionable land deal involving a former state official. So that was one of the primary focuses of the story. And because of the lack of disclosure of those records, it becomes difficult to track those sorts of questionable transactions that affect the public dollar.
Jerry Linowska, president of the Indiana Coalition for Open Government, speaking about Sunshine Week, which begins Sunday and includes a focus on the public's right to know. You can check out sunshineweek.org for more information. Our state's group is at indianacog.org. That's COG as in Coalition for Open Government. The other site you heard us talk about is the Indiana Office of the Public Access Counselor. That is in.gov/PAC. Well, that's our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Marcus Jackman. Glad you could join us this time and hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Reminder that we also need your stories, ideas for places we should go, and people we should talk to. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week. Until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio, I'm John Strauss.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss of the Ball State Journalism Department. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Marcus Jackman. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from Dillman's Furniture, Muncie, serving East Central Indiana with home furnishings from Flex Steel, Bassett, and Simmons Beautyrest. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.